to get our second day underway, but I wanted to introduce to you a bench my uncle Bill Blaney worked on. I designed some of it, and then he enhanced it. He added a lot to it, and we're looking at doing a bunch of these for the radio station. We're going to be doing some boardroom tables, wall panels. He's got a little coffee table with a raven design, because that's what's going to be the symbol of our radio station. It's going to be the raven, because in our culture, the raven is always the one that called people together to resolve issues. So that symbol for our radio station is going to be that we're, and basically the society that houses the radio station is reconciliation. So we've got a lot of issues to resolve from residential schools. So the raven is going to be a pretty powerful symbol for our radio station. And we're looking at a lot of healing and, for me, understanding if, in terms of reconciliation, if the general society understood us, there would be less shaming. There would be no shaming if there was if we were understood. So that's the ultimate goal of our radio station, is that we educate people on who we are, as not only as Homolko people, but as First Nations. So I'm looking forward to seeing some other stuff. So we've got a lot of work to do to get this. Next step, I guess, is the building. We're working on the building. We're working on a bunch of cultural wood for the building. So that's underway now. But I guess as we begin the blanket exercise, I'd like to introduce Devin here. She's going to be working on the blanket exercise. And we've got a bunch of cedar boughs. We'll be doing some brushing off, because some of the history of colonization is pretty raw, can get pretty raw, because our people have suffered a lot under colonization. And that's one of the things that I can see within our young people, is they are hurting, and, you know, this shaming of residential school, they're trying to kill the Indian in you, and a lot of them still feel that shame, and shame is pretty deep wound. It's like you're not good enough. And for them to overcome that and start to have dreams and hopes for their future, a lot of them don't get to that point. A lot of them just stay at the point where they don't even find the hope. And their life becomes the alcohol and the drugs. And that's the sad part. There's all that potential that is missing in that process. So our people need to find a place where we can start to develop our potential. Our kids need to have a dream. You know, a lot of them, if you go ask them, I give our kids a ride to school and I ask them, what do you want to be? And, you know, sometimes I think it's just that residential school that they don't really see a future for themselves. And that's what we need to do, is give our people a future, give our people a chance. You know, it's all rooted in our culture, and that's what all these are. It's all connected to our culture, connection to the land, all the things that our people, you know, I was just talking with John in our language. You know, our language is our, you know, we need our language and our territory and our spirituality and our teachings to connect us to our territory. If you know where you come from, that's a pretty powerful tool. So I guess we'll get on with the blanket ceremony. I mean, they, you know, the residential schools really tried to kill all that. I mean, one of the discussions I had with a lawyer was, you know, we've compensated all the individual people that went to residential school, but we didn't compensate the governing structures that were lost within our people. We lost our ability to govern ourselves in a traditional way. Now we've got the Indian Act. We've got chiefs and councils. And our people had governed themselves for many, many years. And even our relationships with our neighbors. There was a governing ability there. And the residential schools and colonization all stripped that away from us, and we've been rebuilding. For Homolco ourselves, we went down to about 87 people after about 1,000. And you know, the church came and they offered us the remedy for smallpox if we give up all our masks and stuff, all our dancing. So we haven't really sung any songs since about, our last potlatch was around 1870, and that was the last time we invited people from all over the place, and they came and potlatched for a month, and after that our people became Catholics. And then we got to live in a sort of minimized way, I guess, if you want to call it that, because we were minimized because we didn't have our culture. So it's important that we revive our culture, revive our languages, and overcome this colonization. So thank you all for coming. And for this part, when the blanket ceremony begins, we should remember that there's no pictures during this part of the ceremony. Thank you all. Yeah. Have a good day.
Okay, welcome. Welcome everyone that came out. It's a beautiful turnout. It's pretty awesome. Especially want to thank the elders that came out, Daisy, Ralph, Moses, Vera, Gladys, Marina, and I want to thank Curtis for putting together a nice meal, and also want to, you know, thank the people of Homolka First Nation for inviting us and accepting us. And of course our host, Darren. Where's Darren? There's Darren. Where's Darren? So this is the disclaimer I have to read out. So you guys are all going to have to sign this after. Uh-oh. And, you know, confidentiality agreements and stuff like that. Nah, easy. But it's a basis of where how this came to be. So the idea for the series of meetings started with Laith and myself and Gretchen. And then Gretchen would put us in contact with her doctoral thesis supervisor, who is Genevieve Bonin. She's a regret for this meeting, but she certainly will be in Ottawa. And we of course, went to look, see if we can get funding for that kind of stuff. And it based itself on when we went through a CRTC hearing back in 2016, it was quite evident that none of the policies were based around our needs. It was more based around, you know, the CRTC and how they can ensure their own reasoning and needs are met by our broadcasting. And I thought to myself, well, that's ridiculous because it doesn't have anything to do with us. So, of course, partnering up with the people like with Gretchen and Zoe and Laith and Genevieve and the University of Ottawa, we're able to get expertise on policy making for communications and broadcasting. And of course, it seemed like a natural fit for Wawate. We kind of stumbled upon this, and then through our conversations came up with the idea of helping the CRTC and creating a policy for us. And I'm proud to say, like, I've worked in many portfolios. I worked, you know, with a medical school, residential school, and it seemed that up until this point, it's always been the lawyers or the consultants who were speaking for us and creating things for us. It was my experience in a lot of the portfolios I worked with. So it was certainly something that had to be looked out for when we were getting back into this situation, was to ensure that we're driving this model. This is a First Nation created policy, and it's for us and it's for our future generations. So it wasn't going to be let loose easily. And I know that a few times I've had to apologize to Gretchen and Laith and Genevieve and those who may have spoken out of turn. I was obliged to tell them that you're speaking out of turn. And if we're going to walk down the same road that colonialism walked down, then this is never going to work. So this is, so I was able to bring our expertise to the table to say this is our protocols on how to get through our leadership and our communities and speak to our elders. This is how we do things. You know, if you ask somebody a question, don't cut them off. You know, let them speak till they're done speaking. And just because they take a breath doesn't mean they stop speaking. They're just taking a breath and thinking about it. Because within our culture, we deliberate before we speak. And I think that's the wisdom of our nature. So, and I truly believe outside of all this realm that our part of the world is the oldest part of the world. It's still holding on to the old values that were lost thousands and thousands of years ago in Europe and Africa and China. Well, China's kept, you know, Buddhism has pretty much been around as long as we have. So, you know, that's where we find a lot of similarities within the different Abrahamic religions and, you know, Buddhism and Hinduism and stuff like that. Because of those old beliefs are still within our beliefs. So it shows that there was a point one time, there was a harmony at one time that may have been disjointed. And then here we are meeting our new brothers from the new world again. And they forgot who we are, that they're afraid of us. And then made decisions to oppress us. So this whole idea of if we can properly do this model with how we want to see it, I think this can be transferable to any portfolio. And I know, you know, especially with the mining sector and stuff like that, which I don't have much experience in, but we have friends that work in that environment. And they say, well, why don't you come to the meeting and tell those people what you told those people? Because nobody really wants to speak up in that, right? Very often. It seems rude, it's bold, but I think at this point, after 400 years, when we're still stuck in the same rut, somebody's got to speak up. And somebody's got to, you know, get the ruler out and hit some knuckles and say, no, 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 you're not supposed to do that. And wait till you're invited, you know, and do the right thing. So this is basically where this all started off from, and I'm so proud to be a part of it. I know our board, who are all language speakers, are all survivors, and four of them are elders, are very proud that we're a part of this, because Wawate is the leading process in this policy gathering, and we were the leaders in communications, we were leaders in a lot of items that came out of Northern Ontario. And we're just, you know, we picked Wawate back up, and because it was left for dead. It was ran into the ground a few years ago and had to pick it up out of the garbage and clean it off. And it was sabotaged by many people throughout the, you know, and you'd be surprised at who they are. And I'm saddened that those people were even a part of it. And, you know, and it boils back to, we were just, pretty much we were fighting for licenses for the AVR, and we went to the CRTC hearing because we want to bring our languages, all languages of Ontario, to Ottawa and Toronto. So especially so that people who come from our communities that work in the cities can tune in and listen to their language and have a little bit of home in the urban centers. And, you know, it also looked at, we wanted to hook these licenses up with the universities so that our youth had, you know, a familiar and recognizable name that they can go to at school and know that that's theirs and nobody can push them off of it, and instill that pride that, you know, we're taking back our land, not necessarily in an economic form, but in a social form, that we're coming here now. You know, the reservation policy was an ill policy. It was made to put people in the back bush so Canadians didn't have to see First Nations people. And in reversal of that, we need our languages to go to the city. And that way, as even Art was saying in his movie yesterday, and a few other people were saying, Darren had mentioned it yesterday as well, that this radio station gives us, especially in the urban areas, gives us the ability for us to teach Canadians who we are from our perspective, with our words, and with our time slot. It's not based on anything that's coming from Ottawa-centric mentality. And like with the residential schools, I started with the National Residential School Survivor Society and worked with great people like Bobby Joseph from British Columbia here, Roy Littlechief in Alberta, Ted Corbazon's in Saskatchewan, Ray Mason in Manitoba, and my mentor, Mike Kakaji in Ontario. And these guys were old school, you know, and they're still alive, still kicking. Mike is almost 90, still working, and he's still fighting for the people. But what I noticed in that scenario, like, we started before the agreement was signed, and the agreement only needed 5,000 people to kill that agreement, the common experience payment, the IAP, and all that. And so right up until the point until that agreement was signed, we were treated like gold. We were like, we could walk into any minister's office in Ottawa and demand somebody to be fired, or if they wrote a ill letter to some community, we'd jump on it. The day after the agreement was signed, we couldn't kill the deal anymore. It was like nobody was taking our phone calls. It was like, hey, what happened here? Where's that steak you said you're going to buy us? And all of a sudden, you knew that, you know, the power had shifted. And it was a raw deal. Nobody should have taken that deal. Even though it seemed good at the time, we had Canada telling us when to heal and how long we had to heal. And if you didn't heal in that time, too bad, because the money's gone and you can't heal no more. And that's the whole problem with that agreement, was based on Ottawa-centric mentality and how we need to heal in our communities. So I think it was back in 2007, and Roy Little Chief, who is Blackfoot from Siksika First Nation, gave me tobacco and a letter to take down to South Dakota and bring a message to Orville Looking Horse, which was based on what we had seen in our country with, because they had boarding schools in the States where we had residential schools, and they're starting up their discussions about the boarding school and everything else. And it's kind of died out in the last couple of years, actually, but it was starting off, and the basic message was, you know, you can't allow them to forerun this. Like, the idea that, you know, if you sued me in court for a car accident, I can't tell you how to spend your settlement, or when to spend it, or where, why, or anything. But this was an out-of-lawsuit court settlement. And then they basically became our service delivery and our healers and our therapists. But they were the perpetrator. So the whole system was just a fugazi. It's like, it's fake. You know, it's, in their eyes, it was an apology and they did good for the international people. But when they make an apology and then the next day keep behaving the same way, then that apology means nothing. So that's how this whole thing came. And I know we're going way off topic here, but it does tie into policy and radio stations somehow. I'm just trying to figure that out right now. But to come around this full circle, and I guess the whole point of me saying this was because working with these days with open-minded people that know that, you know, they know the protocol of knowing their place. And I think that's new in a relationship. And I think that's something that needs to start, boiling over to other portfolios. You know, how many times you go to a health meeting and you find, you know, you got health people telling you how to heal in your community when they don't even ask, how did you guys heal before? There must have been traumas in the community before all this residential school stuff. Don't forget the food on the chair. So that's what I say. It's just refreshing to work with people in this day and age and that have the mindset, the proper mindset. And, you know, and of course, at the beginning, like, I put them through the ringer. It was like, who do we trust, right? Like, I mean, another used car salesman come to the, have I got a deal for you? You know, it's like, what are you selling me? So... And it wasn't really any of that with, lately I started working together with another company, Cactus, which is Community Access Television, and that's how Lathan and I met. And the person running that organization is exactly the old school white mentality, you know, that, well, I've already got it written up for you, you don't have to do nothing, it's just, here, take this and sign here, you know, it's already done, but we're not inclusive. And being inclusive means from the beginning of the process to the end of the process. Not getting to the table and having a whole plan already made for you. And say, oh, okay. And it never gets implemented anyways. Or it gets halfway implemented and then there's a new chief and council. And it's like, you know, these divisions within our communities is based on that mentality. And that's where communication comes into being, where it's an essential service. It doesn't matter what chief and council are in play. There should always be communications because we need that amongst ourselves and externally with other communities. And I think this process here is a great start. And I think Canada will be honest, will be able to speak honestly when they say this was true dialogue exchange and a form of consultation, because the consultation has to go a lot further than that. But it certainly was, with turnouts this great, this is what it's all about. And now we need to start picking apart the policy as it is exists today and start replacing it with how it fits our values and principles. So the other day at Wawate, Sichuan got evacuated from the community because the Albany River backed up, and you know they get evacuated every year almost, right? So they went to the, and each, it's funny how every year they get evacuated, they go to a new municipality. It's like, okay, this year you get the cash people, so there's an actual joke because it's the cash people, the short form for cash, Kisechuan, so they're from cash, but then they're also from cash, because when they get evacuated, it's an influx of a few million dollars into that municipality, you know, hotels, restaurants, laundry, grocery stores, you know, the ripple effect of the economics of having to, you know, pull people from the community because of flooding. So the cash people are known as the cash people. It's sad, right? Amongst non-native people, because they want you to come. And this year it's Cochrane. And it's, so Cochrane is benefiting from, you know, our destabilized lives. And that's basically what's been going on since this whole thing started, is making money off our backs. And, you know, Mike Akaji speaks as we're no more than a commodity. We're a money-making agent for Canada. That's why they have an INAC. That's why they have an Indian Act. Like, they have a Mineral Act and a Mining Act, you know, a Broadcasting Act. So we're no more than those acts. We're still not viewed as humans. We're still not viewed as, you know, equal to a Canadian, whereas, like, if you went to Saudi Arabia or some of those countries where, you know, the oil barons are royalty, well, that's who we are over here.
Minority. You know,
the minority. Mm-hmm. But we're supposed to be the royalty.
That's what
they use about us. Yeah. And if you look at it in a sense where, Spirits took that one away. So we're just a commodity, and we need to start, you know, changing our view of ourselves and understand that whole system that they created is fake. It doesn't exist on our territory. The moment you cross that line or your barrier of your community, you know, you're walking into a municipal area, that's where that law exists. That's where Canadian law exists. Canadian law doesn't exist here. This is a sovereign state. They have no ability to come on here and say what you can and cannot do in any facet. You can drive around a community in a four-wheeler with no helmet, no license at 12 years old, and who's going to charge you? There's no driving laws. There's no, none of these laws that exist in our communities. So Louis Bird, who's an elder from Pewaunee, we spoke about a year ago about, you know, using the radio. Using the radio to start assembling our laws regionally from each regional community area of the Nan Territory. But it's such a huge undertaking because, you know, there are so many divisions that are within our communities, and these divisions are the ones that keep us separated and keep Canada on top. As long as we're fighting amongst ourselves, we cannot assemble. And that's where, again, the radio station helps to be able to communicate what's going on in this community to all your other communities here. And you have that ability. And Wauwatake shows that. Wauwatake is actually a national radio station because we're on Bell. We got Bell Channel 962. So if you have a satellite dish here with Bell, you can pick up Wauwatake right here, plus on the website and stuff like that. But we've always had a national voice, but we never utilized it. It was only used, you know, locally. But anybody could tune in to our radio station. And for us, like, when we were visiting in Edmonton, I brought George Nakaji and Mark Akagamak, who are my two radio managers, and they're both fluent. One's Oji Cree and one's Cree. But George was talking to a cardinal in Edmonton, and they, you know, they always thought that their Cree was different from each other, so they couldn't understand, you know. But then they started speaking to each other in the language, and it was just fluent. It was a conversation like he was having back home. And he was all excited, and he went home, and he said, you know, those Crees in Alberta, they know what I'm saying. So, and, yeah. No, yeah, no. We're working on that and going, like, through across the platforms because if, you know, and that's another story. The Bell, getting the satellite on Bell, like, we used to actually have our own space on a satellite. And then somehow that power went from having our own connection to a satellite to Bell hovering over us. Now we go through Bell to that satellite. Whereas at one point, that's how powerful Wauwatake was, that we had space on a satellite. Like, I mean, we could be sending signals to, like, you know, Mars. Of course it didn't, but we had that ability. And then somehow, Wauwatake was destabilized in the 80s. And it was, you know, the division was put in. And it divided communities from each other. And who was going to control this? And it was never a part of that. At one time, about control or power, it was basically just, you know, well, we got this radio. Like, Wauwatake started with trail radios. They were, like, way back in the 60s, there were trail radios, and each community would talk to each other from link to link. So you could pretty much, like, throughout the community, so one, you know, one thing, you say some one thing to the community, and then go to the next community, next community, next community. And that's where, bring back to that story with the idea of what happened with the people from Cache. Was there was a lady in Cache, and she was speaking to our broadcaster in the language about what she was seeing. And the hotel didn't have any pillows or towels, and it was dirty, and it was a real mess. And, you know, that's expected. Oh, you know, to put them there, they're not going to worry about it. But here she's saying, like, yeah, they expect us to live here without any of these basic amenities. And, of course, we got the question going, well, was that fact-based? Did you check the facts that the hotel didn't have that? And that's the difference between journalism in the mainstream and journalism for us. It's like, if you told me something, I would not expect that you would lie to me. You're telling me what you see, so I believe you. It's not a question of, I better check your facts. So that cultural aspect of having that integrity, that this is my word and I'm going to protect it proudly, and I'll say only what I see and not embellish anything. In the mainstream journalism, they've had to create laws and insurances for people who tell lies. You know, so that's why they need these errors and omissions and liability insurances, because they expect to lie to each other. So, like, I mean, and it's unfortunate, but it's the truth. And I'm actually, I get very impassioned when we speak this way, because there was another First Nation person that asked us about this fact-based, you know, research, which was just a story that she was telling live over the air. And I thought to myself, that's Stockholm syndrome, where, you know, you take on your captors, you're empathetic to your captors, right? And that's how I felt that lady was when she was questioning us about our own integrity and going, well, you grew up in the communities, like, why? What makes you think that person would say anything but the truth? But that's something who's been, you know, colonized to and assimilated to that thought that, you know, oh, we got to live that way. So I would like to see the discussion here based on, you know, how policy fits us And whether it's just a basic fact of, like, you know, we know we're not lying to each other, so really do we need to be emphasizing that? Or another thing would, maybe there needs to be a percentage of language spoken on the radio to be called a First Nation radio station. Because if you're just broadcasting in English, then you're just another Canadian radio station. But if you're broadcasting a language and a culture, then we need to be able to, distinguish ourselves from that. And the reason why I'm going around that, just to finish this up real quick, the reason why I would like that is because I think each community should be funded like the CBC is funded. You know, the CBC has studios all over Canada. Well, we could have those as well from our communities and then link up to a regional and then a national. So we can have local, regional, and national news being told. And then Ontario could be mixing with BC, and we'd be exchanging our content. And then, you know, back and forth, and that's how we could work with that kind of stuff. But that this idea of funding is, you know, I think you guys, with your radio station, you can look at, you know, applying for funding and looking and through who we're going through. Because I think the more people that apply, then the more they're going to have to put into that fund or tell us all no. And we need to put them to that breaking point. We need to say, well, are we going to grow? Like that 8 million that we all share across Canada, that's what, there's an $8 million amount goes to the Northern Aboriginal Broadcasting through Heritage Canada. And there's 13 of us communication societies that traditionally, since the beginning, got from that fund. But that 8 million has been capped for 20 years and actually dropped down a little bit in the last 2 years. Meanwhile, CBC's budget is crawling up to almost 2 billion. So if CBC and like the Arthur Manuel's 99.2 versus or 0.8 versus 0.2, if we were to actually put proper numbers to that, we're about 7 to 8% of the whole population. So meaning, if we capped it off at 10 for easy numbers, that 1.7 would give us 170 million for our communities to start to do the broadcasting and public broadcasting in our language. Now that turns into more employment, other educational means for the youth to go through, whether it's editing or producing or broadcasting, writing, researching. Like, if you walk into the CBC Toronto, like it's 10 times the size of this, and it's just people working, researching, writing, and producing. Meanwhile, there's the four or five talent that, you know, that, you know, the people that go up on the TV station, they're, you know, that's, they have a team of people. They don't come up with that stuff themselves. Whereas at Wawate, our broadcasters have to do the research, they have to do the producing, they have to do the broadcasting, the editing. Like, we do the job of five, six people, whereas, you know, CBC has got, you know, that one guy's got three, four people working for him. So if we're talking about reconciliation and equality, then we've got to start looking at this at a per capita basis and how communication and media is funded in this country. And I think that's why we should have all 663 communities apply at NAB, and everyone ask for a million. that way, we see, like, imagine if we went across the country and said, well, they turned down 657 communities. Well, who got it? And then you start, then that's when you start following the dollar. And once you start following the dollar, you see who's making the decisions. And then once the decisions are, that's in, it crumbles, we start over at the beginning of the cycles, and I'll end it there. Oof. Thank you.